What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN. It is your boy Herms here, as always, with my boy Tyler L, and we are going to talk about just the overall concept of committee backfields. How much work do you need to be fantasy relevant as both a leader in a backfield or the complementary piece of a backfield? I did a whole study about it. We're going to talk about my findings, and we're going to highlight three potential committee backfields that you should target for fantasy purposes. But before we do that, before I ramble on, because it's going to take a while, I want to check in with you, Tyler. How's it going?
Things are great, man. We are full steam ahead. Two podcasts a week. Feeling good. Back on the mic. Two podcasts a week feels like we're really gearing up for football season. The ranks are updated more frequently. I've shifted away from more dynasty content. Still doing a little dynasty content. You'll still find some there, but like, we're doing redraft mocks here and there. We're starting to shift into booting up redraft leagues. I'm seeing them pop up on my sleeper machine, man. So I'm thrilled, man. It's June. It's still early, but the real degenerates know redraft season is upon us. When redraft season is upon us, that means dynasty and redraft season is upon us for those who play them all. So thrilled, happy, ready to jump in.
You are gosh darn right. It is redraft season, and you're going to want to make sure that you can analyze committee backfields properly in order to make sure you are getting the most value out of your drafts. So we're going to get straight into it. We're going to talk about my article on the website. I will have a link in the description. You have no excuse not to click on it and read it. I did a 10-year study, went all the way back to 2015, and found every backfield that produced two running backs that finished within the top 36 overall in PPR scoring in the same season. That was what I defined as successful for a committee. 10 seasons found every backfield that produced two guys RB36 or better. There were 64 of those. And I wanted to look at these 128 running backs and figure out exactly how much work you need at a minimum, either as a backfield leader or as the complementary piece, to be fantasy relevant. And I found some pretty interesting stuff. So if you just look at the whole average over the 10-year sample, the players who led their backfield. Now, mind you, I did not characterize this based off of the player archetype, because sometimes the, you know, kind of smaller, speedier guy did lead the team in touches. It's all about who the leader is in terms of volume. That's what we're talking about. The minimum threshold that you would need to meet in various categories that we're looking for out of a 1A backfield leader: about 200 carries, about 45 targets. You want to catch the ball about 35 times, and you want to find the end zone about 9 times. None of these benchmarks should be really that crazy to anybody. I think we can all kind of just project that in our heads a little bit. The real meat and potatoes here, and what I think is going to be the most interesting part of our conversation, is that we have this idea that the complementary back in a committee is the smaller guy, speedier guy, the pass catcher, and that they kind of have to be a skill set that is, you know, so not directly opposite, but different enough from the person ahead of them that teams can kind of change things up, make it so that they can do different things with their offense. But we're seeing more and more as time goes along is that the number of targets and receptions required to be fantasy relevant as a 1B complement in a backfield has gone significantly down. So if you look at the entire 10-year sample, we're looking at guys that can catch 47 passes every year, get targeted a little over 60 times. That has dramatically dropped off in the last three seasons, where now it's closer to 50 targets, maybe 40 catches, but you need to carry the ball a lot more. That number has gone up from about 126 in the past over the whole scope. Within the last 3 years, a complement back is averaging 154 carries in their offense. So we put all this together and we're kind of just realizing it's not about having two guys that are different. If anything, we really need to look at backfields that have two well-rounded players, so that way teams can really, you know, mix up the different looks. They can confuse the defenses a little bit more. So, like, I don't know. I think we need to be a little bit more creative in how we think about committee backfields. I think we need to be a little bit more just conscious of the types of players that we're looking for when we're kind of scouring through and trying to analyze these situations. But before we go any further and get into the specific things, did anything I say make any sense at all?
Certainly. I mean, I think the big thing is just dispelling this notion that you have a 1-2 down thumper that's a goal line back, and then you have a pass country back that comes in on third downs, right? I think that's what we think about when we think of a committee, that this is what a committee looks like. In reality, I wouldn't say it can be farther from the truth, but we need to dispel the notion that we can just have an archetype of what a committee backfield looks like. And when you have a committee, these are the kind of roles that, you know, the 1A and the 1B play in the committee. It looks a lot different. And, you know, I think one of the more obvious ones for me, and we're not going to go too deep into this, is just like the Patriots backfield, Travion Henderson, Ramondre Stevenson. You know, I think there's a world where they're pretty even, you know, in terms of how many rushes they're getting, but I expect Travion Henderson to get way more through the air, and that's what's going to make him a better fantasy asset, right? The lead back will be Travion Henderson, who, in my opinion, is this, you know, well, not my opinion, who is factually the smaller back, but is the better pass catcher, who is more explosive. I think, you know, we also kind of, the Lions' backfield's another look where that kind of flips it on its head too, where, you know, Gibbs has almost turned into the lead back, and he's the smaller, more explosive pass catching back, and the guy who spells him is more of the thumper in Montgomery. And those are more, you know, kind of, one's like an actual real life example, one's an example of what I think is going to happen. But I just think thinking about how we're looking at committees is so important when it comes to draft day and figuring out who we want to be targeting and who's going to be of value, opposed to just thinking, here's a guy who's going to get the goal line carries, here's a guy who's going to get the early down work, and then here's the guy who's going to be catching the ball. It just, we have to dive deeper. We have to look a lot closer, and we have to analyze. And luckily, your article does a great job diving deeper. So yes, Herms, makes a ton of sense to me. Excited to kind of talk about how we're going to apply this.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fun. It's interesting to think about these things in a more holistic way, to kind of realize that the game is evolving in a way where we need guys who are multifaceted, that have some overlapping skill sets, so that way that, you know, teams can be a little bit more effective. And we identified three backfields that I think really could be committees, but people aren't taking a lot of time to focus on and really parse through. But we're going to start with one that I think has been a pretty heavy topic of discussion for a lot of people, and that is the Jacksonville Jaguars backfield. When we look in, whether you're just doing dynasty startups right now, whether you're participating in underdog drafts, doing that best ball life, none of these players are very expensive. It does not cost a lot to invest in Travis Etienne. It does not cost a lot to pick up Tank Bigsby, who, you know, we'll talk about in a little bit. I'm not super keen on him, but, you know, Basil Tootin, the rookie out of Virginia Tech, starting to rise a little bit, but even then, nobody's like so expensive in this backfield that it's like cost prohibitive to take as many shots as you want. How do you view this Jacksonville backfield? And do you think there's any value we can extract from this?
I think there's got to be some value to extract from this. We just did a mock. You can check it out over on the website. I believe it was Colin ran it. Redraft mock. The Jacksonville Jaguars were the second to last team to have a player from their backfield drafted. End of the eighth round, Travis Etienne. Ninth round, Bashaul Tootin. I don't know about you. I am pretty bullish on the Jags offense this year. I think they're going to be pretty good. New coach in town. Everything points towards it being a very fantasy-friendly offense. I mean, that's what we saw in his prior gig. Trevor Lawrence, well, probably hasn't lived up to the standard at which he was drafted, has proven to be an above average quarterback, at least in my opinion. And then you had Travis Hunter, Brian Thomas Jr. The offense is going to be good in Jacksonville, and this backfield is murky right now. Travis Etienne cast to the wayside last year. You know, Tank Bigsby given a lot of rushes, but honestly didn't do much with him because that's literally all he got. And the Bashaul Tootin, you know, it wasn't great to see them add. I believe he was fourth round, day three, but you know, I believe Liam Cohen named him like by his name as somebody he wanted to add in his interview. Little tidbit there. It is a backfield that we are kind of afraid to be drafting. And I would say that the ADP reflects that as well, right? You know, taking a look at ADP right now, we're seeing Travis Etienne go off, you know, around like all three, like, you know, overall around like 115, Tootin at like 125, you know, pretty similar to what we saw in that mock. Tank Bigsby well after that. These guys are all priced outside the top 36. Herms, I would bet one of these guys is going to be top 36 running back, right? So
yeah, oh, definitely.
Leaning into this is probably the way to go. How am I handling it? You know, it's definitely one of the tougher ones for me. I Etienne doesn't feel like a great click, but like, would it surprise you if Travis Etienne was the lead, like led in rushes and led in touches this year? It wouldn't shock me. I do like Tootin a lot, but I think, you know, his price isn't bad either. So like, it's tough for me to like, you know, come out the gates here and be like, you know, I have a scorcher take. We're going to go this way. But I do think at grabbing actionable info for me, Herm, is grabbing a piece not named Tank Bigsby is probably smart fantasy football. Whether it's Etienne, whether it's Tootin, whether you want to invest one way or another, you know, I really don't have a strong opinion, but it's just like grabbing a piece of this backfield when you're in the eighth or ninth round. One of these two guys, Tootin or Etienne, is going to outplay their ADP. I am bullish on this Jaguars offense, and I think it's just smart fantasy football to be taking stabs on Etienne or Tootin in the eighth or ninth round with hopes that one of them breaks out. You know, season starts, one of them, you know, it could be a little bit messy, but it's going to work itself out, and one of these guys is going to turn out to be a value, and one of these guys is going to turn out to be a steal. I just don't see them turning to Tank Bigsby because I'm not really sure he offers much in the ways of fantasy, and frankly, I don't think he offers really that much in the ways of real football. So this is more of a, yeah, the stance isn't necessarily me taking a strong one on Tootin or Etienne. My stance is more so saying grab one of them, diversify. Because one of them is going to pay dividends.
It's not Tank Bigsby. We're both fairly confident in that, just based off of, you know, how you're talking about it, and even some of the research that I did. So, mind you, as part of this, I had to go through and, you know, plot every piece of data for, you know, snaps, carries, targets, all this stuff for all these backfields. The 12 targets that Tank Bigsby saw last year actually ranks as the lowest number of targets that any backfield complement within the sample received. He is not very capable of playing this role. I know that some of the findings within this study is that it doesn't matter as much anymore if you can catch the ball, but you do kind of need to do it a little bit, and he is by far statistically the least effective one within the sample size. The only player even close was Tyler Algier in 2023 with only 23 targets and 18 catches. That is like the closest guy we have to really look at in terms of a guy that can like be functional in a committee, be fantasy relevant, and basically do no pass catching whatsoever. So if we're going to pick two guys, Etienne kind of feels like Occam's razor. Who else is it going to be? He's the big name that we all know. And Tootin, the guy that Liam Cohen mentioned by name. Just go after one of these two guys. I think we're pretty good and safe in assuming those things. We're running a little bit over where we would normally take a break, folks. I swear we are going to have more conversation on the other side, but we just have to get into some advertising. So stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Back, back. We are here. The Crossing Routes Podcast, powered by FTN. It's your boy Herms. It's your boy Tyler O. Talking about some committee backfields that we think that people should be thinking about a lot more. And this next one we're going to talk about is one that I don't think a lot of people even perceive as a committee backfield. But Devin Achane down there in Miami was basically a one-man show last year. There wasn't really anybody who consistently split workloads with him. I know Raheem Mostert had like a handful of games where he would get over like double digits and stuff, but it was basically just Achane. And of all the guys that we're viewing as RB1s this year, he is the one that I think is the most vulnerable to somebody else coming in and taking some of that work away. Because we talked last week about Bucky Irving. We already know Rashad White's a potential problem. We already knew that he existed. Some of these other guys do have guys in their backfields that we already knew about. But like Achane, it could be a mystery. Is it going to be Ollie Gordon, the rookie out of Oklahoma State? Could it potentially be Alexander Mattison? Or could it even be another second-year running back, calling back to our previous episode, a name we didn't get to, unfortunately, but we can talk about a little bit here. Jalen Wright, that's another kind of forgotten second-year back that could be a relevant piece in this backfield. Somebody has to pick up some of the work here, right, Tyler?
I would agree with you. See, I still like Devin Achane. I have him projected right around my running back 7 right now, but the thing is, I only have him for a little over 200 carries, right? Where he's going to be making his hay, as they say, is going to obviously be through the air. Pretty easy to get him 80 or 90 targets, probably catching 60 or 70 balls, taking those for, you know, probably 6 or 7 touchdowns as well. He is a pass catching, receiving threat. He's electric. But probably not the best between the tackles runner. There's got to be somebody else who's going to be getting that look. We don't really know exactly who it is. But the thing is, you kind of look at how it was broken down last year, and I think they really pushed him to his brink a bit in terms of his usage. I worry about if he's going to hold up a bit. I want it to be Jalen Wright. Like, there's a part of me that thinks that, like, I don't think Alexander Mattison's very good at football, but for some reason, he always finds his way into the field. Ollie Gordon had some flashes. I really think taking a second Dolphins running back at the end of your drafts is good football. It's smart football.
Yeah.
I think Jalen Wright's the guy I'd obviously go with. He's explosive. Last year, serious disappointment. I mean, he was getting outplayed by a very old Mostert, apparently. So, and I think he was like almost inactive in some of the earlier games. But for me, Jalen Wright is a name that I am monitoring as a guy that, you know, you look at, you know, some of the touches he got, Mostert got. It's not necessarily that wild to find Jalen Wright 130, 140 carries. Might, you know, not catch a ton of balls, but like I think there's going to be work there for a second Dolphins running back to where he could honestly be flexible some weeks, because I don't expect them to be really hammering a Chan on the ground.
And I think I'm definitely with you. If I'm picking anybody that I want to target out of all of them, it is going to be Jalen Wright, just because like he is the most physically imposing and fast. Because I think that's a really important combination of things, especially if you're going to play in this Mike McDaniel offense, sort of, you know, the adjacent offshoot of the McShanahan type experience that we see in all sorts of, you know, offenses around the league. That physical archetype and complement to a smaller H-hand would make a little bit of sense. The next backfield, that's a transition. The next backfield we're going to talk about is one that I think a lot of people are very excited about the leader. It's a rookie. It's RJ Harvey. It's out in Denver. The Broncos, Sean Payton, we know what these offenses are with Sean Payton. We've seen historic committee backfields. The one in 2017, if anybody remembers, rookie Alvin Kamara, veteran Mark Ingram, both top 12, both superstars. Is that sort of thing possible again? Probably not. But is there room for two guys to be super fantasy relevant? Yeah. Absolutely. And I know this because there were 1, 2, 3 separate backfields in Sean Payton offenses in New Orleans in 2018, 2019, and 2020 that featured two guys who finished within the top 36. Alvin Kamara was the leader for all three of these that I'm talking about. But Mark Ingram, 2018, as he was slowing down a little bit, still got 138 carries, 27 targets. That's a pretty decent amount of work. Latavius Murray in 2019 being the complement to Alvin Kamara, 146 carries, 43 targets. And then the next year, 146 carries, 26 targets. Like, we're pretty sure RJ Harvey is going to be the Alvin Kamara, quote unquote. That's the thing everybody's excited about. But who is the other piece of this? And why aren't we talking about who this person could be more? That's the big thing.
Hey, it's Herms, the guy that you're listening to in this podcast, coming to you from the future to let you guys know that we recorded this on Monday, June 9th. That was before we learned that the Denver Broncos would be signing veteran running back J.K. Dobbins. It doesn't change too much fundamentally about this conversation, but toward the end when I talk about Audric Estime, just pretend I'm talking about J.K. Dobbins. Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me because I was not in on RJ Harvey. I'll be honest. He was my RB12 going into the process. I did jump him up to RB6 after the draft as a landing spot in the capital. Gave him probably one of the biggest jumps I've seen at running back for me. But I can't escape that when I was going through my prospecting, when I was going through my rookie ranks, he was a committee back. He was a pass-catching committee back. Now, don't get me wrong. Kind of runs a little bit like a bowling ball. I think there's something there. But I don't know about you. I'm bullish on the Broncos offense. Like, we're talking about these committees and offenses we believe in. I believe in the Jacksonville Jaguars offense. If Tua stays healthy, I believe in the Miami Dolphins offense. I'm in on Waddle. I'm okay with, you know, taking another shot on Tyreek, even though I think the end is coming. The Broncos ascending. I'm in on Bo Nix after being completely out on him and taking an L there. Ingram's in town. Sutton is good. These aren't just committee backs. They're committee backs on offenses I believe in. And it's tough for me to, you know, sit in front of this microphone and be like, I think RJ Harvey is going to be a top 15 running back. I can't say that with any sort of confidence. So if we're saying that, you know, RJ Harvey's getting, say, 200, 210 carries, you know, 60 targets, there's a lot of meat on the bone there, right? But then mm-hmm. where do you have that fall? Do you have that fall to, am I going to tell you to draft Estime Man, that doesn't necessarily feel good. Julia McLaughlin, I don't know. But for me, I think Estime might be worth kind of a late round dart, kind of your last couple picks you have there. You know, he looked pretty good at Notre Dame. He's clearly not that fast. Looks faster on the field. But I do think he's a guy that could surprise people with how much usage he's going to be getting, especially if he takes a step forward again here. Because when you're out on Harvey, you have to, by just like product of being out on somebody, you have to be able, you have to talk to yourself and be like, what's going to happen here? And by product of that is like, I think I'm kind of in on Audric Estime as a late round dart, as somebody who, you know, could possibly walk into, you know, I don't know, 130, 140 carries. He's not a terrible pass catcher, probably shouldn't be used in the pass catching game. It could be a little more frustrating than not for some people. You know, we're not going to have, like you said, the two top 12 seasons, but we know the running backs feast in the Peyton's offense. So like, I was curious to kind of think, you know, how are you handling, you know, these running backs on the Broncos? Cause I don't think I have like a clear answer yet. Cause like me just sitting on this podcast and telling people, oh yeah, I'm in on Audric Estime, it doesn't feel good in my gut. Like, it doesn't feel like that's something that I can say with utmost confidence, but at the same time, like, I need to come up with some answers soon if I'm going to be fading RJ Harvey at cost.
Looking at what they have in-house now, it would make the most sense for it to be Audric Estime. And, you know, kind of recapping some of those numbers, I'm not going to read all of them again, but those Sean Payton backfields, the complementary piece working opposite Alvin Kamara, really didn't get a lot of targets. It was mostly on the ground carry work. So we don't have to necessarily be finding a super multi-dimensional guy. And of all the names, like, yeah, Jaleel McLaughlin, he's like 5'7", 5'8", kind of small. Tyler Beatty, like, also a pretty small guy. I don't even know who Blake Watson is, I'm going to be completely honest, but he's on the roster. That's a thing. So if anybody, you know, Audric Estime makes the most logical sense of just like big enough to handle a workload of carrying the ball that many times and different enough from Harvey that they can do different looks within the offense. The only possible wild card situation is if there is some sort of veteran running back out there that like maybe gets cut, could maybe come in, be part of this team's like training camp or something, but like that's so hypothetical and so far in the future that we can't really bank on that. And the big name that people, you know, probably would have been excited about, Nick Chubb, is going to Houston. So he's already off the, that was kind of the hypothetical name that a lot of people like to float to different places. So like, that's not even an option anymore. If I were to pick anybody, it probably would be Estime. And he's a guy that like, I, especially like Scott Fishbowl drafts coming up, shout out Fantasy Care, shout out Scott Fishbowl. I guarantee you that is probably going to be a name that I'm going to click somewhere in the double digit rounds because I don't think anybody's going to think about it. I think people are going to be hyper-focused on RJ Harvey. And even if you turn out to be right, that is just better news for Audric Estime being potentially relevant. So like, I don't know. I don't want to phrase this as me like planting the flag or anything and like, this is going to be the dude. But, like, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take the chance? With all of the information we have available to us, it's the thing that makes the most sense. And kind of like what I was saying before about the Jacksonville thing with Travis Etienne, it's just, it's an Occam's razor thing. The Occam's razor dictates, like, the most obvious answer is typically the right answer. Overthinking this is not within our best interest at all. I think that's where I'm landing with it, if that made any sense.
Certainly. It does make sense. It's just, we have to think a little deeper. Especially with some of these backfields, we have some data to support some of these thoughts. And it's, I don't know, it's definitely an area when we talk about committee backfields and thinking about backfields that might not be a committee that we actually think could be, right? There's a lot of surprises every fantasy football season. We're wrong all the time. Sometimes it's good to kind of think a little deeper, think a little different.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of opportunities over the remainder of this summer to check in with some of these committee backfields and break down all of the possible news that could come up as you prepare for your drafts. This has been another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast, but just want to remind people before we go, if you want to check out that research I did, I have the link for it in the description. It's there at ftnfantasy.com. But until next time, it's your boy Herms. It is your boy Tyler O, and we are out. Think about it. Staying up and sleeping late.